Owning a boat comes with a number of perks, like being able to fling your favorite fishing rod around. And here's another perk. GEICO's boat insurance covers your boat and your belongings. And with specialist support from agents that are as passionate about boating as you are, there's so much value that you'll want to high-five someone. But not while you're holding your fishing rod. That's a prized possession. So hold on tight with both hands and keep it covered through boat insurance. Get more with GEICO.
So on the way over here, I nearly got rear-ended on the highway at a pretty high speed. And it's one of those where your heart just sinks because you're trying not to... The guy in front of me, his brake lights didn't work. So I didn't realize we were even slowing down. So I had to like slam on the brakes with auto lock. And then you look back for a second in the mirror thinking like, please don't, you know, the person behind me, don't you rear-end me. And it just so turned out the person behind me was my wife. So I almost got rear-ended by my wife. Can you imagine getting rear-ended by my wife at high speed? So it would have been a three-car accident with two of the cars being my own cars.
Man.
Can you imagine?
Did she know that it was you?
And I have no money right now. So I cannot even imagine. I mean, we were so close to disaster. Yes, she did. So she takes my daughter to school. I'm going a different route a little bit. To work, to the studio, and they were trying to get my attention and like be funny and wave at me and like drive next to me, and I didn't know it. I was listening to music and not paying attention, so that's why they were intentionally behind me. But thank God we both were paying attention. Otherwise, she would have slammed into the back of my car and I would have been so devastated.
That is, I think about that sometimes whenever I've almost like backed into Candace's car before just like getting out of the driveway. And I've always thought like that would really that would double up the pain.
In like the multiverse saga, it gives you a second to for a second be like, do you realize how much different my day could be right now?
Oh,
like for
yeah.
Last 5 minutes of that drive, I was like, oh my gosh, I would have been side of the road, canceling this podcast, depressed, both of my cars destroyed, you know.
Do you have that moment right before that happens, like, or when you think that
I can't get my
either
right.
You're about to rear end someone or vice versa, that you just get really hot all of a sudden? It's like an involuntary physical reaction.
Just afterward, at least, my heart was racing. You know, like you got to calm it down for a minute, 30 seconds or so. I want to share the exchange we had right before we started so that you know, like now the audience knows the mindset I'm in coming into this podcast and the mindset Robbie's in. I go, hey, Rob, how's it going? And he said, oh, I'm tired. I said, you said I'm tired. I've lost my spark. And I said, for life or for work or for what? And you said, well, work is life. So. We got a terrified
doing the work,
podcast host and a depressed podcast host today.
Honestly, I think those are both ends of the Daredevil spectrum. So I think we're coming in perfectly.
It's all right. Well, let me cheer up this podcast here for a second. Two things happened this week that I thought were really, really cool for our podcast. And I know that's going to sound very self-congratulatory, but I do think that we try to value our community so much here that these are community earned goals too that are reached because it's because of you guys. But just look, I know we're never going, like we're not Dak Shepherd, we're not Joe Rogan's podcast. Like it's never going to be that size. And I get that. And that's totally fine. But there are times where if you get out of that mindset and the growth mindset and just occasionally take a step back and go, this is pretty freaking insane that you and I just start having conversations. And this week, on Apple Podcasts alone, we crossed the 2 million plays mark.
Wow.
So again, I know some people, like we've never really shared our numbers. Like to some people, that's tiny numbers compared to like those big ones. But if you think about it for a second, the fact that over 2 million times on Apple alone, somebody has hit play on an episode, pretty crazy, dude. So congrats. Yeah. Congrats to us.
That is. I'm glad that me just... playing the episodes over and over and over and over every day is finally working.
I was wondering why there was this jump of 1.7 million plays from Austin, Texas, and that was it. And then another really cool thing, which won't change anything numbers-wise, but just kind of validating for you and I, randomly, Spotify, the Spotify podcast Twitter account, like the main account, tweeted podcast of the month, and we were on it. And it was amongst like Amy Poehler and the Rewatchables. So it's like you're going through and it's like they're flipping through the artwork. It's like the Rewatchables, Amy Poehler, Jason Horowitz or whatever, Happy Second, Friends from Work, blah, blah. I'm like, what the heck? And yeah, that's really freaking validating. That's cool.
Yeah. I was going through and I was like, wait, why aren't we tagged in this? And then, yeah, it's like we're like as it flips between them, I was like, oh, yeah, you know, peers of Amy Poehler said that before.
If Amy wants to come on, you know, we can make it work.
I'd be happy to help her out.
So, yeah, yes. Okay, this was a double feature for the first time since episode 1 and 2. Okay, let's just get into it. I'm going to kick us off. I love it. I was again glued. This is now with Severance ending last week. This is now my show for the next 3 weeks where I'm only really watching this. And if here's the thing for me, episode 5 obviously was a little bit of a standalone. You could use the word filler if that's a bad thing, then don't use that word. Apparently, according to an interview with Brandon Davis, episode 5 was the only episode that was totally left untouched from the original show.
I did not know that, but you can clearly tell that. I was telling Candace that as we were watching last night, that feels like what the show would have been.
But whether that's a filler episode or whatever, for me, I still loved it. Yes, I know it didn't like tie into all these other things, but I love the MCU centering of it. But I also just love a little bit getting to see him being, quote, Daredevil without putting the costume on. But a little bit of growth in that department. Episode 6 and the ending of it is obviously the story here and how crazy of an ending that was. We'll get there in a second. But I don't know. I still was just so locked in.
I think that that's an interesting place to start with the double feature of it all, because I was curious why they were doing that early on. I think you and I talked about it. I didn't know if it was going to be that 5 was some crazy, you know, part one of a two-part thing, like a cliffhanger, and they wanted to immediately follow up. But I actually think it's the opposite.
Yep,
like,
for sure.
I think that they wanted to make sure that people, like, episode 5 was great. And so I don't think that it's like a dig. It's just, I think that it doesn't end in a like, oh my gosh, kind of a way.
Right.
And I think that they want to make sure that people stay hooked.
Yep.
And so I think it was smart to kind of have to pair that with a very like kind of tentpole episode as 6.
I think if you just put 5 out, there definitely would have been a little bit of dialogue this week about, well, that was fun, but Matt's still not Daredevil in his costume. And like, that was kind of a side story that had nothing to do with Heather or Fisk or Vanessa. You know what I mean? Like none of that was connected. Bullseye, Foggy, etc.
Yeah.
So I think there would have been some dialogue there, but I think this was smart because as is, it's like, oh, that was a fun side story. We got some more background. And then you right away get back into Muse and Fisk.
Yeah.
So if you don't mind, can I actually just start there too? Like we've been talking about how this show is doing this. Season 3 kind of did this parallel storyline thing with Fisk and Matt, where they're both at the bottom of the barrel and then they're both slowly rising to power. And what does it look like for them to regain that control, regain their power, and become the characters we know them to be? Whereas here it's a little bit different in that they are both starting at a spot of being fairly successful. Matt's a successful lawyer and trying to live a different life. And Fisk is a successful mayor and trying not to be the kingpin. And Matt's trying not to be Daredevil. And I thought this was a pretty awesome escalation of all season. We've been seeing them just get tested at different levels, Can you go back to being Daredevil? Will you go? While I'm doing this whole speech, Robbie lets Samwise out of the room, then goes back to close the door. And then 2 seconds later, Samwise comes back in the door. Now the door's back open.
And then as soon as I close the door, he's going to be so mad that the door is closed.
But if it's open, Candace is going to be mad that it's not closed. So
yeah, it's complicated, man.
It's a conundrum. But it's this look at, like, so many times in this season, they've been tempted to get back to their Kingpin or Daredevil ways. Mm-hmm. And I loved the ending of this being a parallel look of them both breaking. So for Matt, yeah, it's like, are you kidding me? Now they got Hector's niece. There is literally nothing I can do on the law side. The cops aren't with me anymore. Yeah. Like, and then he literally says one of the most iconic lines in Disney Plus history, which is F it. Like, I'm just going to go be Daredevil, which is crazy. Puts on the actual costume and then goes and just, like, lets loose. And while he's beating the crap out of Muse, he actually lets out this primal scream that is very similar to Kingpin in season 3 with Bullseye. Like it's almost like Matt's just like, he's kind of enjoying just like being Daredevil again and beating people up. And then to contrast that, literally punch for punch with, as Fisk goes in for a punch, it cuts to Matt hitting Muse.
I love the editing there.
Yes, it edits to Fisk finally just giving in. He's now overweight. It is a thing, Robbie. I was correct.
Yeah, his suit you were totally right.
His suit doesn't fit. It's him just, and then like the whole, him like doing those mayor, all his obligations of the black tie stuff he was saying, like shaking hands, is just wearing on him. It's wearing on him. And then people like Luca coming in and just giving him BS. And then the police chief giving him BS. It all kind of hits this point where he snaps and just laughs. And then it cuts to, I'm just going to be Kingpin. And he's literally killing Adam. And it's almost like a sick game. He gives him an axe to just prove that he still has it, that I can still beat you up even with an axe. And that shot for shot, I mean, they literally even went shot for shot as far as like they showed Adam laying on the ground and his heartbeat almost stopping, and then Muse laying on the ground and his heartbeat stopping, and both of them kind of reacting to it. I thought it was like a perfect intense, I mean, so intense, like I was locked to the screen, escalation of what this season has been about. And it sets up for, I think, a pretty crazy final three episodes, because I think they're both kind of back as they are. And I have so much more to talk about, but that's my opening premise.
Yeah, I mean, I loved the follow up on episode 1 and 2, like those initial splits, as we were like watching them, like you said, like watching them start at the same spot. And I think seeing like, it's that same question about like these men of violence and what's like even the primal scream that you're talking about from Daredevil, right. I think is a really, like that's an intentional, important choice, because it's like there's this like rage in Matt that you've seen at different points throughout the series. But it's like, it's not just that he has this sense of like right and wrong, like Spider-Man or Captain America, where he's like, I'm going to go out and protect the people because it's the right thing to do. Like, it is that, but there's also this like real, like righteous anger that's in Matt that like he keeps pushing down every time he has to work within this system that's frustrating him. But he's like always, it's like the more frustrated he is, he's also like the more afraid that he's going to be like Frank Castle. And so there's this like anger at the system, but you also kind of feel this anger at himself for being like torn in this way and like becoming this thing that he's afraid of and that he's kind of criticized other people for doing. And so it's like, I love that moment of all of that coming to a head. And there's just like a ferocity to this portrayal of Daredevil that we didn't see all that often in the original series.
And it's a perfect throwback to the original conversation in the diner. That was point of that conversation. Both of them, it's hard to hide our violent nature. Is that what the line was? Something like that.
Yeah.
And it's just, I think it's really good storytelling to kind of follow up on that conversation in such a effective way there at the end. You're right. If we get three episodes of Matt in a Daredevil costume, you've said this so many times, this will be the first time since season two that we really had that as a thing. Especially now with like the multiple suits he can choose and the batons. Yeah. And I
love the there he is again.
Unbelievable, Sam Wise.
It is. It's unreal.
he just did it again, listeners. He closed the door and then Sam Wise came right back. He doesn't want you to actually close him out. Oh.
Yep. See, that's
there's something interesting going on, but as soon as you close it, he wants in.
Yeah, it's when one door closes, the same door opens. That's what they say. I think, yeah, I love so much seeing him in the suit, but I also love that you're getting and we've seen this in the promo shots, but we're getting the kind of like bearded Daredevil look. Mm. Like it's a little less clean cut and a little more like, and that's something that we saw a lot in the Chip Zdarsky run that we've talked about because it serves as a basis for so much of the show. So I love it from like a character design perspective. I like the version of Daredevil that we see there. Like it kind of fits this, it's not a, like it's almost happening to him against his will. Like he's not even like in Daredevil mode. It's like he's Matt Murdock still, but he just like has to put on the suit and just like let it happen. And so I feel like it fits with that kind of descent. But yeah, I think that the way that they're using Muse as a part of that is really genius, because like that in the, you know, again, Charles Soule and Ron Garney created Muse as a part of their run of Daredevil that preceded the Zdarsky run that so much of this is pulling from. But I think merging them in that way is really clever, because having Muse come into play as Matt is retired or trying to be retired, and having that be the thing that pulls him back in, because he's just such a horrifying villain, and the like the scope and the scale, like 60 people is like beyond anything that Matt's dealt with in terms of like someone just like murdering people, like, you know, other than like a giant hole in the middle of the city.
Yeah, you know? Right. And they said that, I a little bit thought Frank got pretty close. I mean, that first Irish gang meeting was probably,
but those
12.
Were criminals at least.
Yeah. Yeah, like, that was an interesting thing. Like there were no, I guess, positive motives from Muse here. Mm-hmm. There was a little bit of debate on this podcast a few weeks ago if maybe, you know, Matt would kind of side with Muse in his pro-vigilante because of the nature of the crimes type nature. And It clearly does not seem to be that way. In fact, the two girls that want to take a picture with him that he then just murders, he really is a serial killer.
Yeah. Yeah, which the other question that we raised was whether Muse would have any kind of powers here.
What did you think?
I think no. I mean, he does have, he's able to kind of hold his own with Matt, which is impressive.
Yeah, I was looking for that too.
Yeah, I mean,
a little bit. And, I mean, he was a good fighter and like got up from the strangling, stuff like that.
But I think that just the tone of the show, I'm not sure that it would make sense. Like in the comics, Muse was an Inhuman at the time when Marvel was really pushing Inhumans because they were trying to make them the replacement mutants. And so throughout Soul's run, you see a lot of that. There are a couple of runs like that that are very time stamped within Marvel Comics. And I think without that, which I don't think we would get in this show, it would just be too much of a stretch to explain that he has these special powers. Like, I think it's more just that he's probably like in the realm of Bullseye, where he's probably like freakishly something, but like not like super anything.
If I went back and rewatched, I do think the majority of the fight was Matt landing punches on him.
Yeah.
It didn't seem like Matt got blown back by any super strength or something. of that nature.
He does, but he was able to
hold him off. Yeah, he hung around. Hey, I was just gonna say we've been talking about Chip Zdarsky and we've been talking about Soul. Check out those comics on organicpricebooks.com. Yeah, organicpricebooks.com. Use the promo code Friends from Work.
I pulled these out because these are the runs we're talking about. If you're watching on camera.
Oh wow.
Part one and part two of Zdarsky's run, which Organic Price Books just restocked. The part two of it has been sold out in a lot of places.
Those are larger than I thought.
Oh yeah. I mean, I think Zdarsky broke one of the records for one of the longest runs on this book. Hmm. But
promo code Friends from Work, all one word. If you're gonna,
and I have to say before I forget, I finally finished my reread back through the whole thing. I read it as it was coming out in real time, which is always really fun. But it also means you're reading an issue a month, more or less, for years, and you kind of. It's fun to go back and read in these omnis because you get the whole thing told together and you catch all the little details. And it really is a perfect Daredevil run. Like, it encapsulates everything that's great about the character. It hits on all the parts of the mythos, including like the hand stuff, in a way that is actually compelling. But so much of what we like, Cole North, the police guy that was introduced in episode 6, like the guy that was talking about
who went to the academy in 3 years
became made detective in 3 years, like, yeah. That's a big character in Zdarsky's run.
Oh, okay.
I had such a great time plowing through the whole thing again that if you are going to read any Daredevil stories, especially as this show is coming out, I would strongly recommend that people pick those up.
No doubt. We'll be right back.
At Ritual, we know what goes into the holiday season. The potluck planning, the gift giving, the spreadsheets. So this new year, take a moment for yourself with science-backed support that puts you first. So whether you're focusing on supporting foundational health with a clean vegan multivitamin or supporting your gut health with Symbiotic Plus, do it with 30% off your first month at ritual.com/podcast. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
I couldn't help but think of you, this podcast, and get really giddy to just see the anti-vigilante task force being put together in such an organic way. I was like, yes, that's what we've been hinting at.
And it's like, I love the way it's set up where Fisk is like zero accountability, like off the books.
Yes.
These guys, like, no body cams. They report directly to him.
But
like,
it's legal, it is just, technically.
Yeah. Yeah, because he's, the law. So he's just...
And...
He's being kingpin again.
Right, and a fairly natural way for it to go down. Like I like the part where the sanitation guy says it's blood and whatever. And then Fist snaps and says, I think we have a problem when the sanitation department's finding out about this before the NYPD.
Yeah.
And so he's like, so I'm going to do my own task force because you guys aren't getting it done. It's just setting up so perfectly for the Thunderbolts tie-in and what this all looks like, you know? Not saying they're going to, but.
But again, it would make so much sense.
The Muse stuff is appropriately creepy. Yeah. I feel like it's as dark as it needs to be, right?
Yeah. I mean, it is.
They're actually showing photos of people's eyes being ripped out, the blood being suctioned from them, people hung on meat hooks. And his outfit, his costume is legitimately awesome, right? Not like awesome in a good way, but I mean, it's a sick character design.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's like, I think it translates really well. It is like, I love whenever Matt encounters a villain like that, that just horrifies him because it is such this, like, again, it wakes up something in him that I think you have to, like, it's why the Punisher can, can like impact him the way that he does.
Right.
But this is like so much more extreme to your point earlier.
Right. Well, it's also because he knows a little bit of Frank is correct.
Yeah.
That's what this episode is. It's a little bit of,
yeah.
Dang it. I got no other options.
Which, by the way, I loved the conversation between him and Heather in episode 6, where she's like, what about the Punisher? Like, can I talk to him? And he just starts laughing.
Yeah, go interview him.
Yeah,
why don't you go
interview
Frank? Yeah. Which, please don't kill Heather, please. It feels like they're getting dangerously close to connecting her to all of this. And if for any reason, so Heather doesn't know that Matthew's Daredevil, but Kingpin does. So if Heather says anything about my boyfriend in a counseling session or something, or Kingpin sees them kissing in the street or something, now Kingpin knows they're together. That's a leverage point. That scares me. I don't want to lose her.
Yeah.
I don't.
I do. I like their dynamic a lot.
Same.
I was wondering when she was talking about, you know, you've represented vigilantes over the years. Do you think that?
Yeah.
Like, do you think Matt remembers representing Spider-Man?
Oh, that's not where I thought you were going with that. No, right? Because he only represented Peter.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, because it's funny, like at the end of No Way Home, you have the like all these scenes that they show from the Holland trilogy where it's like he's blocked out of frame. And in my understanding, it's just he's kind of this like hole in people's memory. But I don't think that it like overwrites their memories entirely, because like Happy at the end remembers that. He knew, like, he remembers Aunt May, and he remembers knowing Aunt May through Spider-Man. So I would think,
but he doesn't remember Peter Parker was Aunt May's
right
nephew.
I feel like he does, and they're gonna follow up on it at some point in some way. But
I was more curious about what is the tie-in for her between Matthew and Daredevil. Am I missing something? She said you represented Daredevil. So
yeah,
is there just like a generic.
Or she says like you like connected to Daredevil or something. Maybe it's something from like season one, you know, with, I don't know. Yeah. That's a good question.
Or something off screen where he had to stand up for Daredevil, even though Daredevil wasn't there at some courtroom thing or something.
I feel like, there's got to be something from, I'll have to think about that. But I, while we're talking about the vigilantes, we should also talk about the, like the inclusion of both Ms. Marvel, obviously, but also,
I'm getting there.
Jack, the swordsman.
Yeah. Yeah. Really, really, really quick. Last thing. I think top tier acting from both the two main leads with like, there's this, when Luca shows up to Fisk, there's this lip quiver that Fisk does when it's like, I literally want to murder you right now, but knowing I can't do that in front of everybody, but it's like, I will eventually murder you.
Yeah.
And he just has this subtle like, where it's like, I can't do it, but his lip starts quivering. And then Matthew has some of those similar ticks as the two storylines are paralleling. So it's like Matthew's reaction to the news that Muse has killed 60 people. And like Cherry going like, you know what? Sit this one out. Remembering that Cherry knows he's Daredevil. But also knowing Cherry knows that like Matthew might do something he regrets if he doesn't sit this out. But again, just the beauty of how well they told the story to get Matthew to this point, because if he doesn't do something, Hector's niece is going to die. There's no other way around it. You can say like, go by the law, but there's nothing they could do in that moment to stop him.
Right.
So, okay. Anyways. Yeah. Jack Swordsman shows up from Hawkeye. And then obviously I loved all the Ms. Marvel stuff. I thought Yusuf was a fun addition. Makes sense that he's a banker. But the ending being, you should come over and get dinner sometime. And he says he would love it. And then he kind of doubles down like, no, for real, let's do it. And like he says Kamala's in California, which is interesting because one, could she be recruiting people or is she just visiting Bruno or something? We don't know. But then,
yeah,
but
that's also still where She-Hulk is, right?
Yeah. But then, yeah, as I say, he doubles down in that he says something. I can't remember the exact line. But he doubles down in saying she'll be there for dinner or she'd love to meet you or whatever.
Yeah, I know. I wonder if we're supposed to, like, is there going to be a follow up with that?
I'm guessing not. I'm guessing since that was the old show, I'm guessing with the new showrunner, they probably thought we can touch base on that later. That's my guess.
Yeah, that's fair. Although I feel like they would have cut that part of the exchange. But maybe not.
I mean, I think
would be fun.
Maybe it's just a fun Easter egg for people. That's the nicest thing anyone's ever said about Jersey City.
I know. On the swordsman front, it's funny because I recently was watching back through Hawkeye and in part kind of getting ready for this. And I love Tony Dalton in both performances. He's presenting very differently in this show than he did in Hawkeye.
He's like challenging Fisk. He's not joking around. He's like very resolved in his opinion. Yeah. There,
which I like. I mean, I don't think that it has to be one or the other, but
if he's gonna be around more, if they want to make him more of a character, I think he should be more. Yeah. He should be more like this.
Yeah,
personally,
I like that. I think he's a clever inclusion here because we did see in Hawkeye that he's kind of part of this uber wealthy class of like New York elites. So I think he's a great character to both like further the proliferation of vigilantes in New York and also show the people like another key element of Zdarsky's run that is so effective is like once Fisk becomes mayor, he has the sense that he's now the king of the whole city and he's got more power than he ever did before. And then he realizes that there are these kind of like almost fictional Koch brothers, like these super wealthy, like people that are pulling the strings of politicians and businesses and so much richer than Fisk is, so much more powerful than Fisk is. And he realizes that like, compared to these people, he's still just like a nobody. And
was that your interpretation of that scene? Because I was curious about that too, because it's kind of cutting back and forth between Vanessa saying like, just let them talk. It's going to make them feel powerful. And then Fisk having to sit there, listen, but they both kind of have this smile on their face of like, we know what's really going on. Was that that was the read of that?
I mean, I think so. I think that it's a slightly different, like the show I think is giving Fisk a little bit more agency in that situation. Like it's showing that he knows what's happening. And I think Vanessa is like her role in it is part of why he's able to navigate it the way that he does. But I still think that they're trying to show that Fisk is like, he's not in the spot where he can exercise the level of control that he is used to exercising. Like, he's out in the open now and all of these people are reminding him that they still have the power to decide whether he succeeds or fails. And I think that then leads to this, like the frustration that he takes out on Adam, I think is in part this, like, it's the Luca conversation. It's the having to go to the black tie things that he doesn't care about.
Yeah.
It's that he has to deal with all these people.
Good call out.
And kind of bow down to them. So I think it's a really important arc for Fisk because we've talked about how it's like, how many other ways can you show his like rise to power and his ability to manipulate everybody? Like, I think it's important to see him hit roadblocks and have to figure out like how to get around them the same way that the hero would, because he kind of is the protagonist of the series as well.
Mm-hmm. Okay, some other just shout outs real quick. In the fifth episode, the phone lines go down because the power gets turned off. And for a second, I thought that Yusuf was trying to call Kamala.
Yeah.
That's who I thought he was trying to call. Maybe he was calling the cops, but it's because it was just coming off the heels of that conversation, like, we have a Miss Marvel, it felt like that's where that was going, which is just, it's really fun to see the juxtaposition of those two characters in particular in a lot of ways. You know, like, Matthew comes from a very broken family. Matthew always has hidden his identity. Obviously, he's blind. It's just a totally different world. Like, if you could think of one character to juxtapose from Matthew, someone like Kamala is about as opposite. Like, she's out there about it.
Yeah.
I mean, she's kind of hiding her identity too, but you know what I mean? Like, a lot of people in her life know it. She comes from this strong family unit. She is like a fan of all this stuff.
Yeah.
And I think that could be a really fun interaction. Especially if Kamala ever found out that Matthew was Daredevil. Like, if he told her that. Anyways, it's just interesting to think of that character coming into an episode like this to help. Would be so kind of strange, but that's the world we live in. You know, I don't know.
It is one. I loved whenever the phones all went down. Someone was like, oh, I hate AT&T.
They really caught some strays out of nowhere, AT&T.
I loved it. But I think that's one thing that I would like to see more of in this show. Like, I sent you last night some of the some of the pages from the Charles Soule comics where Muse is making all the murals kind of based on these different vigilantes. And I think I understand why they're not doing it, but I wish that this show, well, that's not necessarily right. I would like to see the show incorporate more characters that we are already aware of, even if they're not actual cameos, like references to them when we're talking about all these vigilantes, just because it's a little bit like we're introducing White Tiger.
Can I push back can I push back for a tiny bit? I mean,
you mouth fart at me just then? That's the response? That's the intellectual debate that we're going to have here?
You know what? That's fair. That was really rude. That was really rude. That was really rude. I was just going to say, my push, I feel bad now. I legit feel bad. My pushback was just that if they're not going to give us cameos, what more could they do? They've already mentioned Spider-Man. They've shown us Punisher. They've now mentioned Miss Marvel. They showed us the swordsman in battle. I mean, I feel like we saw Bullseye. We've seen Muse. We saw White Tiger be a big part of it. Like, we've already had 7 or 8 vigilantes involved in the 6 episodes in some way.
That's true. I mean, and the Punisher call out is a good one. Swordsman, I'm a little torn on because I'm not sure that that's really like we're being introduced to the concept of him as a vigilante in this show.
Yeah.
In the same way that we were with White Tiger, which is not a problem. I think I'm just looking back through those comics pages. One of the things that's really fun is,
but it's not a stretch to think he was a vigilante in Hawkeye. Now looking back.
Yeah. I mean, Or that he was like becoming one, I guess.
He already had some weirdness with his father, and he was already going to the black market auctions, and we saw that he has the sword ability at the end. Obviously, the show wasn't about him. I'm not saying he was either, but I don't think it's that much of a stretch to see a video of him fighting some people with a sword.
No. I guess I would just say I really like the references that we've gotten to Miss Marvel, and like to the swordsman, like incorporating him back in. I think I would just like, as they're starting to introduce the swordsman and set up like, okay, this is going to be a vigilante, like with the BB footage and then Tony Dalton being in the black tie context. Like I would just like to see them like, maybe I'm just thinking of Spider-Man. That's all that I'm saying.
I'm really sorry about the mouth fart. Please forgive me. Two, I was actually going to ask you that. So what would be in your mind the satisfactory? So I think one more reference or shot of Frank would help. I think if there was and I don't know what their plan was, you know, he wasn't going to be a part of it. I don't know their plans for the final 3 episodes, but I think I would in this season like to see Frank like killing somebody or like out there doing something. I mean, I'm not going to be bummed out, I don't think, but
no.
That would help. And that would help. And I think one more reference to Spider-Man would help.
I think that's right. Your pushback is good. It's not that, like, they're not doing anything wrong. I think it's more just one of those things where, like, the benefit of Marvel Comics is there is no cost.
Yeah, right. Associated.
Like, you can cameo whoever you want at any given time as long as it's not going to interfere with another writer's book.
Right, and we talked about not only that, the Sony stuff is a big deal. I mean, it's like if Marvel had full ownership of Spider-Man, I'm pretty sure they'd do more of that stuff. Not even showing him. We've talked about this. Oh, gosh. And I would love it for this season still. Still. One more.
Yeah.
And we've talked about all these ways you could be creative without it being Tom Holland, cost-wise. If it was your rights, you know? If they were your rights.
Just because, like,
show him swinging away the back of him. Or show...
Yeah,
or get to a crime scene and someone's webbed up. Or a reference. Or any of that. Any of that.
Like,
a shadow.
The panels that I sent you yesterday from the Muse comic, where it's like all these kind of these plays on different characters, where there's like She-Hulk graffiti and Moon Knight graffiti and Spider-Man and Punisher and like all of these like things that I think they could do, even if not with Spider-Man, like it would just be fun to show. This awareness of other characters that you don't actually have to, like, we don't need Tatiana Maslany in the show to be able to kind of have fun references like that.
And my pushback would be that I feel like they are already doing that a little bit.
Yeah.
Maybe not
that's true.
Fully as we would want, but then also there's three episodes. So they're okay. Here's what I can't get out of my head. I read somewhere and I shouldn't have read this. So I'm debating even saying this. Because of the expectation that we always talk about. But I read somewhere that there's supposed to be a big bombshell character reveal in this series still, like in season one, that somebody's still coming. And so I'm not trying not to let my hopes get up, but I am watching each episode thinking like, I wonder who that would be. So in episode five, I was thinking like maybe Miss Marvel will literally show up and they hid that from everybody. And that would have been really fun. But I'm thinking what could be a bombshell character. Also, I just got to say this. We're recording this on Wednesday, March 26th. Apparently, according to Twitter, a couple of those like leakers.
I was about to just say that.
Yeah. And I don't even know what this could possibly be, but there's this rumor that Marvel Studios is going to announce like the biggest bombshell they've ever done. According to the source, even bigger than RDJ being Doom is supposed to happen today. So I have no idea why it's today. I don't know who, like there's no casting that could be bigger than that. I don't think. So what would it be? Would it be, a movie announcement?
Maybe just like a premise thing, like an announcement as to like what's going on.
A director? I mean, it can't be that. The only thing I can think of, it's like maybe if Spielberg or like Nolan were going to do a movie, that would maybe be a big bombshell. I don't, anyways.
Because it's,
I hate that kind of stuff a little bit. If it happens, I love it. I'm just saying I hate the like, oh, let's see what's going to happen.
It is, it is interesting trying to figure out like how somebody knows that it's supposed to drop at a certain time.
Today.
Yeah.
Unless it's like a trailer or something and they know the like editing company, you know, or
I'm hearing that it could be like a teaser.
But how could that be bigger? But that can't be big. First of all, they haven't even shot that much, right?
I mean, I wouldn't think so, but I guess it is only, it's like a year from now.
I know, roughly. But the whole point was like, they were just starting filming like a week ago. They would not have stuff edited and looking good.
Yeah.
Okay. We'll put out an emergency social media reaction if something like that were to happen. Okay. But for today, anyways, way off topic. I'm going to go back real quick as we're kind of wrapping up this episode and rapid fire some stuff. The fighting in episode five, I got to give a shout out to the silent fight in the hallway was really creative.
Yeah.
To have absolutely no music and he's trying to be silent was really fun. How he's taking that guy down, catching the gun from falling. Pretty top tier. And it should be noted that the leg break was as horrific as I thought it was going to be. And that was from the original show. But Matt putting on a red mask, which is kind of funny, and jumping into that guy's leg was, woo, okay.
You know, like one minor thing that I appreciated from that episode, Yusuf was like, I love that he didn't become like a hero. Like, he did the right thing, but he was scared. And he, like, I just sometimes in those situations, you kind of elevate characters that are that should just be normal characters to make them like now kind of quasi superhero helper people.
Yeah, right.
And I really liked how grounded
Hawkeye
they kept
a little
him.
Bit. The finale of Hawkeye a little bit.
The LARPers. Yeah, like the LARPers. Yeah. Like I like that he was still very like even with what we saw him experience in the Marvels, I think it's so important to keep supporting cast members as supporting cast members. Like the problem with comics often is like Spider-Man at this point now, all of Spider-Man, like all of the people that were just Peter Parker's peers in the original comics have now all like died and been resurrected and become like different versions of Venom and Green Goblins and superheroes. And it's like,
It's like Peter has a friend and you right away start asking like, oh, I wonder if he's actually going to be so-and-so. Yeah. It's like, could it just be a classmate that he's a friend with?
It's like, which to like Daredevil's credit within the comics, that's one thing that like they have pretty consistently kept to like Foggy Nelson as just like Foggy Nelson.
Yeah.
And that's important. And so, yeah, I liked seeing that with Yusuf here.
So I love that shout out. And I'm going to give one more shout out to the actor because I feel like the other side of it is the temptation would be to kind of make him, for lack of a better word, like a bumbling kind of idiot, like jolly.
Yeah.
And I'm thankful that they didn't do that. He played it really perfectly, I thought, and it was written well in that he was clearly the same Kamala's father. He had the jolly and but he didn't turn into like just a joke or like even when he was stalling, it felt very appropriate to his character. Like he was legit terrified, but he doesn't know how to stall a criminal. And I so love, like, he's trying to like give the history and then he's like, what day is it? Cause actually they changed the code. Like I was thinking, what does that even mean? Stall for a random guy. How do you stall?
Right. Right.
And so, you know what I'm saying? They didn't make him just like a jokey character. It wasn't like Jar Jar Binks of a sudden they win because he's like, oh, you know?
No, it was like, it was really well balanced and in part because, I mean, you and I have said from the very beginning of Ms. Marvel that he's just such a great ad. Like as an actor, he's so endearing. He's just good. He locks into these scenes in a way where he's effortlessly funny without being like overly silly, like you said. So it's like if there's any character that they were going to pull from another Disney Plus show like that, I think he's such a great choice.
Totally agree. Okay, other rapid fire things. Fast forward to the sixth episode. It did my heart some good to hear Matthew praying and just see that part of his faith is a huge part of the first three seasons, and it hasn't been as big of a part so far in this show, other than some themes that he's, you know, dealing with, but to start and end the episode with a prayer and to show the prayer over Foggy's kind of in memoriam thing. And then at the end of the episode, it's a prayer while, why am I blanking on her name? Hector Ayala's
Angela.
Niece. Angela? Is that right?
I think so.
While Angela's dying, but then juxtaposed that same prayer, I thought was a really cool thing. A follow up on that part of his character, but also a powerful, it was just powerful.
No, again, I think that that's one of the things that, that like Zdarsky really focuses on in his run is like the end, like he does a lot with Matt as a lawyer, but it's, you know, it's funny. Different writers have different takes on like what interests them about the character because there are so many fascinating like dualities within Matthew Murdock. And that's why there's so many great Daredevil stories. And so you can focus on the fact that he's like a lawyer that also breaks the law every night, or you can focus on the fact that he's a Catholic that dresses up as the devil. And I really love this. I love that we're getting that shift again and just showing that he is like actively, it's not just him going to a priest to confess whenever he feels guilty. It's like an actual thing that he is trying to have steer his life. And I'm going to be curious to see how, like, I like bringing that back to the forefront as he's now kind of getting back into Daredevil, because I want to see if those things like clash or if he starts kind of framing Daredevil as like the Lord's work. which is something that Matt has done at different points in his career. And then there's kind of this dangerous, like he starts to view himself as like a holy warrior, which then raises these issues of like, are you able to, like, are you able to see that you're still fallible? And at some point, does that then make you like no better than, again, someone like Frank Castle, who thinks that like the ends justify the means? So they're like bringing a lot of things to the surface, is my point, that I think will all be like, it's setting up for like an interesting culmination or like combustion potentially.
Well, and that was my biggest thing left. There's three episodes left, but it's a weird situation because we know there's a second season that they're already filming. And we know Thunderbolts is going to be just weeks after the finale, a couple of weeks. And Thunderbolts happens to be in New York and happens to be kind of ground level type stuff. And so I don't know where they're going to leave this series. I'm really actually curious about it. Like, I think the rumor is that Fisk is still mayor in Thunderbolts and or in the second season and has it. So like, I don't think they're resolving that as far as Matt's not going to stop Fisk from being mayor, or like, I don't think by the end of the three more episodes or stop the vigilante, the anti-vigilante task force. You know, maybe Muse is stopped, but I'm curious if there's still another casualty that's going to weigh on Matt even more to be Daredevil in the next season or in Thunderbolts or whatever. And on a greater MCU level, is there a larger tie-in at the end of this? Like, is this a Daredevil show that they're going to wrap up? Like, one season kind of ends with a bow, like Matt stops Muse, Fisk is still mayor, but Matt has Heather and he's kind of back to being Daredevil, and that's how they end it. And it's kind of like season one-ish in how it ends.
Yeah.
Or is it going to just be a part of the story and it will just end at like very not the end of a book kind of thing, because right away we're going to just jump into the same world a couple weeks later and then a year later with Daredevil again.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't know how much it's going to tie in.
I would like to see it end with like Matt and Fisk like fully embracing their double lives.
Agreed.
And so because we're seeing like,
but both of them still getting away with it. Like, there's not resolution there.
Yeah. Like I think that I would rather it end where like we can pick back up with that status quo. Cause I think that there's just so much more to be explored here. And I want him to be mayor during Thunderbolt.
Yes. And I want him to be at the height of his powers. Go back and look at it. Season one, he's got his powers, but by the end of it, he ends up in jail. Season two, he's in jail the whole time. Season three, he works his way out of jail, but we see him rise up and then at the end of it, go to jail. Then in Hawkeye, we see him kind of, he's operating again. He's out of jail and he's operating, and then he gets beat at the end and goes to jail.
Yeah.
And now if he's shed all of that and he's now mayor, I don't want this to then end with, and he gets found out and he goes to jail. It's like at some point jail doesn't work for him. First of all, second of all, come up with a different storyline. So I think it'd be cooler if, like you said, like by the finale, it's not that either has defeated each other, but that it's actually, they're both at the height of their powers. Matt has defeated Muse by himself. He's taking out the anti-vigilante task force, but the anti-vigilante task force only grows stronger under Fisk. He gets promotion because Muse is gone. And it's like, he gets celebrated because he's taking care of crime, you know, just whatever. I want them to both be at the height by the end to set up the next season and or Thunderbolts.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it is like, it to the extent Muse is now associated with these like pro vigilante art, like art pieces, then I think it does create a good opportunity for Fisk to align, like to paint every vigilante as kind of being in the same category as Muse. And so I think that that's like I think what we can now see is whether this is resolved at the end of this season or not. Like, Matt is going to feel a responsibility to stop Muse and be fighting to stop Muse. But while he's doing that, he's probably going to also be hunted down by this anti-vigilante task force that's trying to stop Muse, and probably blames Matt to some extent, or blames Daredevil to some extent, as like perpetuating that.
And does Fisk go public with Matthew's identity? You know, now that he starts coming out as Daredevil again, he warned him not to do that. Is it just take them down, or does he at least start telling the cops, like, this is Matthew Murdock? Here's where you can find him.
I feel like he won't tell. I don't think he'll tell people straight up because he likes having that control over, you know, like it's like a point of leverage. And I do wonder. I mean, there are so many storylines involving Matt's identity coming out and him being either on the verge of going to prison or going to prison. We've seen him go to prison as Matt Murdock, and we've seen him go to prison as Daredevil. And I do wonder if we're heading towards, like, that is something that has not been explored yet,
right,
in this show. So I kind of like that. Again, I love the idea of ending this season with Matt at kind like back in the Daredevil mode, because I don't want to see him like lose that again and have to build back up again. But I do like the idea of down the line, like, him losing straight up to Fisk. Like, he's always come out on top in the end and put Fisk in jail. And I kind of love the idea of that reversing now that Fisk is the law. And
that would be
now
crazy.
He knows what he does about
that. That'd be crazy if that's how it ended, you know?
Yeah, I mean,
like, he announces his identity and takes Matthew Murdock to jail, and that's the end of the thing. Would be a crazy ending. Be crazy ending. Here's how I'll wrap today's episode. Tuesday nights are an important night for me because my wife has something every Tuesday night. So I put my daughter to bed, but then I know I have from like 8 to 10:30 to play video games with my boys. So Tuesday night is video game night for my boys. When this show decided to start coming out on Tuesday night, I was a little bit bummed because it's going to conflict with that. Wednesday night would be so much better for me. And so I'm just telling you to say my heart is very much in the, how can I still make video game night work, but still make this podcast by 8 a.m. the next morning? Do I get up at 6 and watch it? Do I whatever? And none of that really works. And like last night, for example, I had a text of like, are you coming to video game night? And I didn't have that hard of a time saying no. And I got my whole couch situated. I had my computer to like respond to that tweet from Spotify and some stuff on Instagram. And then I had my notebook and I was by myself and I got the thing ready and I hit play. And basically from 8 to 9:30, I didn't end up doing any of that stuff. I didn't play video games. I didn't answer any texts on my phone. I didn't answer anything on the computer. Wow. Because I just was like, my heart was beating a little bit faster and I was watching the show. And in a weird way, if you know the context of my life, like I'm trying to paint, that's like the highest praise I can give it. I am just, nothing else is distracting me from it. I didn't edit our bonus episode I wanted to edit. I thought I was going to do that because I was just in the world. And so I'm looking forward to the final three and how they're going to do stuff. That's all.
When you say that, I don't think it had computed that we only have three episodes left.
Yeah. They've double dipped twice, you know?
Yeah. That's I'm excited.
Thanks for listening. We love you guys. We appreciate all the support you can give us. If you can check out Friends From Work Plus, that really helps us on the financial side of things. But you can also check out our Discord channel, get involved in the community, subscribe to our channel, tell your friends about this podcast. We'd love to see it grow. Thank you for listening and thanks for supporting. We'll see you next time right back here on Friends From Work.
At Ritual, we know what goes into the holiday season. The potluck planning, the gift giving, the spreadsheets. So this new year, take a moment for yourself with science-backed support that puts you first. So whether you're focusing on supporting foundational health with a clean vegan multivitamin or supporting your gut health with Symbiotic Plus, do it with 30% off your first month at ritual.com/podcast. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.